Good morning, beautiful people, and welcome to Hash Marks and Hardwood, the third episode. I'm joined by my co-host, Nicholas, as always. Nicholas, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. You know, it's a Friday. You know, getting ready for the weekend.
It is indeed a Friday. That's the benefit of doing this show. It's always on Fridays. And our very special guest today, in person, part of the Athletic, part of the Fan as well, Sports Writer of the Year, please welcome James Boyd. James, how are you doing, man? Thanks for joining us.
I'm doing good. Excited to be here and have this opportunity to talk to you guys, man.
Yeah, first of all, thanks for the shout-out on the Fan, too. I was listening, and I was like, they were like, where are you going, James? I was like, I wonder if he's going to say it or not, but you're here with us. It's great to have you. And me and you were talking off-air and stuff down the hallways. It's been a loaded week in sports and stuff. So, but first of all, thanks for joining us, and let's get right into it. Let's get right into what was one of the crazier NBA deadlines in really recent memory. I know a lot of this is also going to be very repetitive to you, because I know you've talked about this a lot on the morning show, but we'll get to the big trade in a couple of minutes. Is there any specific trades besides the Benedict Mathurin and Vika Zubac trade that really sticks out to you in this deadline?
Well, I think the big ones would be James Harden basically saying, get me out of here, when he was with the Clippers and joining the Cleveland Cavaliers, and you're switching out with actually Indiana native, Darius Garland, born in Gary. He heads back to the Clippers. So that's one that stood out. And then Anthony Davis to the Wizards. I think the Wizards are doing some interesting things there with Anthony Davis now, Trae Young, and some young assets. So those two trades outside of the one involving the Pacers really stood out to me.
Yeah, and the Wizards now, they kind of seem like they're trying to change the culture. They're trying to go from a really what's been a dumpster fire of a franchise the last couple of years to try to flip the switch and try to win now. You go from, you know, having multiple different people with bad records. I mean, you're talking not even 20 wins some of these seasons in the last couple of years. And then you're going from going all in. You trade CJ McCollum and Corey Crispert for Trae Young. Then you trade for Anthony Davis as well. And that bunch of people there, Chris Middleton was involved in that, his expiring contract. So the Wizards really seem like they're trying to flip the switch. But James, another trade that stuck out to me at the deadline was the Memphis Grizzlies trading Jaren Jackson, but not trading Ja Morant. Because when he got traded, I thought it was for sure. I thought it was over for Ja Morant. So that's a very interesting trade for Utah.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you're looking at a Utah team that now I think defensively would be very good with Jaren Jackson Jr. there. You got Lauri Markkanen still there as well. So they're trying to build some things, I think, kind of in an old school way with from the like the outside, you know, or inside out. And then you look at also Keontae George has already taken off for them as well. So they got some young pieces over there. But Ja Morant, I mean, still being with the Grizzlies, I don't know how you and Nick feel about this, but I was shocked by that. I thought as soon as they blew it up with Jaren Jackson Jr., we were going to get a notification saying that Ja Morant was on the move as well.
Yeah, I see, and I don't even know where would have a Ja Morant deal looked like, because, I mean, they had the ideas floating around. Obviously, the big one was Minnesota, but him and Ant might not have meshed the best.
Well, it's hard because he has a huge contract, and there's been the character issues on and off the floor. Like, you don't always know what version of Ja Morant you're going to get from a leadership standpoint. And then, to be quite honest with you, I think the biggest reason why his value has kind of diminished is that he's an injury-prone, smaller guard who can't shoot. So those guys usually don't get you a lot in return. But I do wonder if he'll have a chance to kind of rehab his image, rehab his tenure with the Grizzlies, or could he be moved in the offseason?
And kind of like touching on that, I think this is his worst three-point shooting year of his career, if I'm not mistaken. Ja Morant's not had a good
out there shooting
year
like
for me.
Me
on the arc.
That's but, not good.
Yeah. Also, when we talk about guys, James Boyd, that didn't get traded at the deadline, I think the big one has to be Giannis Antetokounmpo. Not traded at the deadline, the Bucks are able to keep him. However, I will say this. I don't know how you feel about it, but do you think Giannis will be a Buck at the end of the year?
Oh.
All right, I shouldn't say end of year. Going into the offseason.
Yeah, that's a good question. I would love to hear both of you all weigh in on this. I figured he would not get moved to the trade deadline because he's such a massive player and you would want to get so much in return from him that I don't think any team is really going to jump that early when you don't know. Like, for example, if you're trading a first-round pick, you don't know where that pick is just yet until the draft lottery happens and the season is over. But I think when the dust settles in the offseason, you can revisit that. But I did think it was weird. Nick, I'll toss it to you. I thought it was weird that Giannis did all of this, you know, talking about, you know, I want to be here. And then, but then behind the scenes, it seemed like he demanded a trade, but then he didn't. And then he posted that clip from Wolf of Wall Street, like, I'm not leaving. It's like, well, you could have said this a month ago and say there won all the drama. So, I don't know. How do you feel about that?
I mean, I don't watch enough basketball to know a lot of things about basketball, but I think since he's such more of an impact player than some other players on the team, I think they want to keep him as long as possible.
They should.
Until they find somebody, kind of like a Luka or somebody to bring in or trade him for.
Yeah, which is hard to do. Which is hard to do. So, I don't know. I'm excited about, you know, his future, just because I do like pettiness and drama. I will not lie to you all. I think that sports brings that out of a lot of us, you know, whether it's basketball or otherwise. So we'll see what happens with Giannis.
Yeah, and I think another thing with Giannis, too, he's not just going to be traded for nothing. It's not going to be, and I don't want to say.
Oh, I might need your firstborn child for Giannis. I might need that.
And I'm not going to say, and the only reason I say this, too, is, man, superstar trades were so, like, you know, you traded him, you got everything back, but that kind of traded, like Nicholas mentions, that kind of changes when a guy like Luka Doncic gets traded for one first-round pick and Anthony Davis, who's not even on your team anymore. And to be fair, Max Christie's a good role player, but he's not Luka Doncic. So that's kind of...
analysis.
That's the kicker there, but yeah, just interesting. And honestly, I think if Giannis switches teams away from the Bucks, I don't know about your guys' two opinions on this. I think it would either... I think Giannis in the future, if he's not a Milwaukee Buck, I think he'll either be a Miami Heat or New York Knicks. As much as it pains me to say that second one, I think he's either will be a Knick or he will either be a Heat. There is kind of the... There's the chance, just because it's L.A., he could be a Laker, just because it's always Lakers are always going to be in the hunt.
Yeah, after a Luka trade, can you tell a Lakers fan that they're not going to get the player they want?
And I don't really know. I wasn't too much into basketball in 2018, so I don't know how much they were in the hunt for LeBron when his contract expired in Cleveland. But yeah, it's just interesting there. But let's get to the big one, James and Nicholas. I can't say last night because trade deadline was at 3. But yesterday, the Pacers traded away the 6th overall pick, 2022, I believe.
Yes.
2022, 6th overall pick. Benedict Mathurin, Isaiah Jackson, a 2029 first, and this upcoming first with a couple of protections, and you can correct me if I'm wrong on this, James, but I believe the whole pick is protected besides 5-9.
Exactly.
So basically, if you're the Pacers on lottery day or on lottery night, hoping not to see your pick be 5-9. But it's also interesting when you get a guy, they're sending Mathurin Jackson, the 2 first-rounders, to the Los Angeles Clippers for Ivica Zubac and Kobe Brown. When you get a guy like Zubac, who is kind of, I know you guys mentioned earlier on the morning show as well, the Pacers have lacked a lot of physical presence recently, like a lot of physical mentality. And this is a guy... who I'm not sure when the game was, but I've been seeing it all over the internet, who grabbed 29 boards against the Pacers. And the Pacers kind of lacked that mentality, that physicality, with obviously Miles Turner being at the... That's not a knock to Miles Turner, still a great player, but just not a physical beast like someone like Ivica Zubac. So I guess what I'm trying to get is, you're still trying to tank and look for an AJ DiVansta or a Darren Peterson or a Cameron Boozer. But also, it's kind of hard to do when you bring in a really good center. So, James, what are just your thoughts on this trade as a whole?
Well, one, I'm looking at the three of us in this room, and I'm trying to see, you know, okay, if I play the four, Nick can play the shooting guard. You can handle point guard duties. I think if the Pacers put us out there, we can get this tank done, you know, the right way. It's interesting, though, because morally, as a player, if you're Pascal Siakam and company and you go out there and you play, you don't play to lose. You don't play to put yourself in a position to not win games. But the overall reason I think you make this trade with the protections that you have is that you really do want to land a top four pick. And to do that, right now, you're in that. I think they have the third worst overall record in the NBA. And you want to stay there or get worse as the season goes on. And how do you do that? You lose. And that, to me, is the difficult part. Because as a coach, Rick Carlisle, as a player, you understand the big picture. But in the moment, you're like, wait a second. You know, we don't necessarily want to get better right now. We want to be terrible right now so we can get better for next season. So I'm very curious to see how it all plays out. But I understand why the move was made. Because although Zubats is a different center than Miles Turner, when Miles left, he still left a massive hole in your roster that you really didn't have, in my opinion, a good avenue in getting someone else to replace him if you did not make this type of trade. So, you know, I will say it's risky. I mean, everyone feels good about it right now, but if you get to those ping pong balls on Mother's Day and they don't bounce the right way and you lose that pick, which, I mean, I was on tankathon.com, which lets you simulate the lottery odds. Boy, I clicked that thing a few times. Nick and Bryson, and it did not go well for the Pacers. Every time I clicked it, it was the sixth or seventh pick, and I was like, no, like that's not what we want if you're a Pacers fan. So
no, not at all.
It's going to be very interesting to see.
Especially, and honestly, I don't think a pick from 5 to 9, I think you're better off trading it, to be honest, if you're the Pacers, because I think this is one of those drafts where it's you're all in on a star.
Yes.
I think that's it. There's not to discredit anyone on the current, like, the bench is perfectly fine right now, even with, you know, trading away Benedict Mather and an Isaiah Jackson. When we look at the current bench, it's T.J. McConnell, Obi Toppin when he returns from injury. You know, these guys who had a huge role in the finals last year. But, man, and it's not just Benedict Mather either. We talk about Isaiah Jackson. I heard you say earlier, of course, listening in on The Fan, that you've had nothing but great experiences with Isaiah Jackson media-wise. Just kind of touch on that. I know you said he's a really down-to-earth guy and really doesn't let a bad game or a bad loss get to him media-wise. So kind of just your personal experiences in the past with Isaiah.
Well, you all know this. You know, working in sports, I would imagine at your school here at Ben Davis, after a loss, man, you're trying to talk to the coach or any players. They don't always want to talk to you. You know, they don't always want to recap or share. But I think Isaiah was someone who was very gracious with his time and went through a lot. I mean, you go from being a very high draft pick and thinking you're going to be a centerpiece for this franchise to tearing your Achilles and then trying to rehab your way back. And right now, I think it's fair to say he's not the same player just yet, which it usually takes about, I would think, about a year and a half, 2 years to really get back to your pre-Achilles tear form for most athletes. So, you know, wish him the best in that regard. But on top of that, I think he's handled everything with a bunch of class, and he's somebody who also had a sense of humor. He was somebody who would definitely, you know, make it pretty fun in the locker room after a couple of those wins as well.
Well, let's kind of, I do want to talk a little bit about the Pacers and obviously the dreaded Achilles tear of Tyrese Halliburton. But the only reason I want to talk on this, James, I'm sure you've seen, Nicholas, I don't know if you've seen, but Ty's getting big. He said he's up 30 pounds. He's bulking up. And he looks good, and he's been shooting around a little bit. I'm not sure what the what his kind of pre-warm-up has been before these games, but I know he's talked to guys, and really, I know a lot of people say there's really only two people that have really only looked the same from coming back from an Achilles injury, and maybe even only one, but those two people being Kobe Bryant when he tore his Achilles, and then Kevin Durant not too long ago. Shout-out KD. He looks the same as he did when he tore it in the NBA Finals.
You know what's crazy, Bryson? He's averaging more points per game after the Achilles tear than before.
That's insane. Like, I mean, he's the greatest pure outscorer of all time, probably, when you look at someone like Kevin Durant. I know that's always been a debate. But when this team comes back, judging on whether you get this pick or not, this is going to be a dangerous team, because whether it's this projected starting lineup is going to be Tyrese Halliburton at the one, either Andrew Nembhard or some sort of hopefully 1-3 overall pick being either AJ DePansta or Darren Peterson at the 2 or Andrew Nembhard. Then at the 3, obviously you have AJ DePansta or Aaron Nesmith, depending on who we pick. And then the 4 would be Pascal Siakam. And then finally, obviously, the Pacers yesterday at the deadline getting their man in Ivica Zubac. This is a dangerous team, James, that could very well make the NBA Finals in the next couple of years.
I think that is, like, you want to send a message to your players, right? You, when you're talking to Tyrese Halliburton, who I imagine had some input and some say in some of these decisions that were made at the trade deadline, you want to be able to tell him and look him in the face and say, okay, number 0, we know you gave as much as you possibly could physically to help us try to win a championship last year when you went down in the finals, but we're not going to punt on when you return. We're not going to, you know, be hesitant to try to build another contender right away. And it'll look different. It'll look a lot different, I think, with the way you play. I think Zubac is a really good player, but how do you implement your style of play with Tyrese Halliburton, who's running gun and get up down the floor? Like, that's a big dude running up and down the court. He's 7 feet. And, you know, can he keep up with the space and pace that the Pacers want to play with? And then, like you said, Bryson, are you fortunate enough to add a premier talent in the draft? And if that is the case, and I think you have reopened yourself to this championship window you're chasing. And quite honestly, the bummer about this season is that it is wide open right now in the East. And your hope is that next year, when it is more formidable, because not only will Tyrese Halliburton be back, but that Jason Tatum guy's pretty good too. He'll be back for Boston.
And
do you have a chance to still contend next year?
Not to talk about that other guy in Boston who's been playing at the MVP level, Jaylen Brown. And they also trade for Nikola Vucevic at the deadline as well. They send Anthony Simons to Chicago. Chicago made some moves at the deadline. I know you're originally from Illinois, James. You co-hosted a show in college.
Yeah.
So to kind of talk about, you know, we talked about it a little bit, but, you know, you're from Illinois. You know, now you're here. Kind of just talked about your fandom growing up as a Chicago sports fan and now getting into it as an Indiana sports fan, like media-wise and all that.
So I want to ask you all, what teams did you root for growing up? What sports did you watch?
It was always whoever the family was for. It was always dad. So for me, my whole life, it's always been IU. You know, obviously, really not so much the Fever until Caitlin came in. But
right, understandable.
Fever, Pacers, Colts.
Okay.
Like that. I'm not a two college guy either. It's IU basketball, IU football. I'm not gonna lie, I don't understand the people that are like, yeah, I'm a Michigan State basketball fan, but I'm a Michigan football fan. It's like, just pick them together. Yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, for me, it's always Indiana through and through.
Okay. And then how about you, Nick?
Me personally, I do watch a lot of Ohio State football mostly.
Okay.
Yeah,
I got a buddy from Ohio State, and he's from Ohio, and he's a big Ohio State fan. I actually watched the game with him against Michigan maybe 2 years ago, Nick, and I didn't realize how intense it can get. He was pretty amped up for that game, and I was thinking, I might not want to watch this with you anymore because you jumping up yelling at the TV too much. I can't hear what they're saying. But for me personally, I grew up in the Chicago area, Romeoville, Illinois. It's a southwest suburb of Chicago.
Yeah.
And which explains the Twitter name. It was a joke back in college. Everyone where I'm from lies and says they're from Chicago to sound, I guess, tougher or more cool. And I was like, I'm going to put Romeoville in my Twitter name. And it kind of just stuck. And I was like, all right, well, I might as well just keep it. Yeah, I'm like, it's part of the brand now. But yeah, I grew up as a Chicago Bulls fan, but not because of Michael Jordan. It was more of because of Derrick Rose and Joakim Noah and that era of the Bulls. I mean, I was
Bulls,
I was a baby when Michael Jordan won his last championship, so I didn't see any of that. So I can't really sit here and say like my fandom was rooted in that. No, it was because of Derrick Rose, number one, and realizing that, you know, he isn't that much older than me, and just dreaming of trying to, you know, one day be in those shoes. As you all can see, I did not grow up to be 6'3" and super fast, the ability to dunk on people. That just didn't happen for your boy. But, and then I was a big Bears fan as well growing up.
Yeah,
and I cheered against the Colts in the Super Bowl way back when. And I thought when Devin Hester ran it back on the opening kick, it was destiny back in 2007. And then I was reminded that Peyton Manning is much better than Rex Grossman. And, it ended in agony. Nick, you can laugh. It's fine. I've been through the pain of it already. But now I would say since I've joined media, my fandom has kind of died down a bit. And so I don't really, like, feel the emotional weight of the wins and losses anymore.
Well, James, I'm going to be honest. I don't think there's been much more two fan bases between Illinois sports fans and Indiana sports fans who have really had it worse in the last 10 years. Boy. Obviously, you guys having your double doink situations, our star quarterback retires on us. We obviously get the Achilles tear in Game 7. You guys just recently lost a game of the year with the Los Angeles Rams.
See, Bryson's trying to open up old wounds. See, I thought this was a friendly show here, and now he's bringing up all my scars. But, yeah, man, that's part of fandom. But I would say being in media, one of the cooler things about what I have a chance to do and what I hope you all get a chance to do, you know, if you continue in radio or otherwise in media, is that you get to kind of chronicle these events. So now my perspective, whenever I see a big moment or a big game, it's always like, dang, I wish I was there. Not to just say I was there. Like, don't get me wrong, it's cool. But how would I cover it? How would I kind of shape this moment? And I had the opportunity to do that a few times throughout the NBA Finals, covering some games for 107.5 The Fan and The Athletic, and being there for when they won Game 6. And, yeah. Okay, James, how do you take that moment that everybody saw and then kind of, you know, put it into your own words to give everyone a little bit more and a little more context of what was happening? So that was a fun ride, man.
All right, James, we've talked a lot about the hardwood, but let's talk a little bit about the hash marks in the NFL. We will talk about the Super Bowl in a little bit, but first of all, let's talk about what went down last night at the NFL awards and stuff. First of all, any awards that you were kind of shocked by, surprised by? Mike Vrabel, Coach of the Year. Matt Stafford wins his first NFL MVP. Adam Vinatieri makes the NFL Hall of Fame as well. I think Larry Fitzgerald
as well. Yep.
A lot of Hall of Famers, a lot of awards went down. Don't know if you watched this. I personally was not. I did not because I was on a call last night between Pike and Ben Davis. So,
yeah.
Kind of just your thoughts. Any awards that surprised you? Maybe some people you thought got a little, maybe not robbed, but.
Well, first, Bryson and Nick, it took everything in me not to drive over to Pike last night to watch, you know, Ben Davis and Pike boys basketball. I had to watch the NFL Honor Show because I cover the NFL, and I was like, boy, this is when I'm earning the check, right? I could be anywhere in the world right now. I got to sit here and watch this long award ceremony when you could just put out a list, is what I was feeling. But as far as the events go, I think I wasn't surprised by any of the picks that were made as far as who won, but I will say it was pretty cool to see Matthew Stafford, I believe in what, his 17th, 18th year in the league, win his first MVP.
Yeah.
And I think that probably solidifies his Hall of Fame candidacy, because now you look at his resume, you can say, okay, he was an MVP and a Super Bowl champion, and he ranks probably top 10 in pretty much every passing category. So I don't know what else you can really say to say he shouldn't be in the Hall of Fame. I think for a lot of his career, especially in Detroit, he put up big numbers, but he was losing. Went somewhere, got a championship, and was on a really good team this year. I actually picked him to get to the Super Bowl. And although he fell short of that, that was a really, excuse me, special moment, and got a kick out of him basically saying, I'm running it back. You know, he had announced what he was going to play next year. He says it on that stage and gets it done. And then from a local perspective, I thought that Adam Vinatieri should have got in last year as the greatest kicker ever. But he gets in this year. But then I feel for a guy like Reggie Wayne, who's still waiting because – if any of you all know, and it's probably too complicated for me to explain, but the gist of it is when you vote for the Hall of Fame, it isn't just, okay, we're going to go around a room and pick one, you know, pick these one out of these 10 guys just to get in. A lot of it has to do with the amount of votes you get, how many of them you get, when you get them. Like, you have to get 80% of a certain percent. It's crazy. So it really makes it very hard to make it out of just like the finalists into the actual Hall of Fame. And Reggie Wayne has kind of felt the weight of that the last few years.
Yeah, and you know, we also talk about a guy who misses out in the Hall of Fame and Bill Belichick as well.
Who's that? Yeah, I never heard of that guy. Everyone has this big – I mean, we gotta all right, let's get into this, all right? Robert Kraft, Bill Belichick, I think they both should have been first ballot Hall of Famers. But now, after seeing how this all went down, guys – I'm not sure they get in at all, you know, and I'm joking. I just think that it was weird to know that you as a coach, and Bill Belichick, I believe, has won 8 championships. I believe 6 as a head coach, 2 as an assistant. And then you look at what Robert Kraft has done as an NFL owner. I mean, his franchise is now going for its 7th Super Bowl, which would be an NFL record. So that was weird that those two guys didn't get in.
It's weird to say this, but James, do you feel like there is an added asterisk on the 6 Super Bowls because of Tom Brady?
No. I don't necessarily take away from people having success because they had other great people around them. Yeah. Like, I get it. You can say you didn't win another Super Bowl without Tom Brady, but that could change literally on Sunday.
Yeah, and so, I agree with you, too, because it's like, it's also not like you decided to draft Tom Brady, too. Right. It's not like he walked into your office and was already
a sixth-round pick,
greatest quarterback of all time.
No one, people knew who he would be, that he would have been the number one pick. He wasn't. I mean, he got skipped over by every team in the league 5 times. I mean, imagine, you know, going to play soccer or something like that, and people are picking Nick, and they're like, all right, give me the other guy. Every single time that you're up to get picked, you're probably looking around like, wait a second. So I think a lot of that is, you know, a little overblown. And then I'll add, though, that for as much as we want to give Tom Brady credit for the things he did with the Patriots, which he deserves, he had some all-time great players around him. I mean, let's not forget that Adam Vinatieri, who came over to the Colts and won a Super Bowl, he kicked a lot of good big-time field goals, and I think, in turn, has decided a lot of legacies because of that. So it's kind of funny when quarterbacks win in football, they get all the credit, Nick, but then when you look at the overall like team, it's like, wait a second, Tom Brady had how many Pro Bowl teammates? Yeah. How many All-Pro teammates? So I mean, it wasn't just him.
We talk about the great, I mean, top 3 tight end of all time and Rob Gronkowski with them. We talk about, you know, a top receiver of all time, Julian Edelman. I mean, you can put a number in front of that wherever you want to. I'm not going to get into that. There's been a lot of talented receivers in the game of football, but talk about, you know, Julian Edelman, his incredible clutch catches in the Super Bowls, and you know, obviously the famous 28-3. Like, you don't, that doesn't just happen. Like, you got to have teammates willing to come back, and you know, you got to give a little bit of credit there. And I think the only reason I mentioned that is because a lot of the hate, I think, was going towards Bill Belichick because of the years following in New England without Brady wasn't the best with Mac Jones. And then, obviously, he moves over to coach college and not the greatest year either.
You don't say.
So, it's been interesting. But, you know, speaking of a college team, which I know, Nicholas, is a little bit more your forte, is college football. We talk about the magical season of the 16-0 Indiana Hoosiers. Man, it was a ride. Nicholas, I'll let you kind of take the floor. What was a wonderful season from the Hoosiers? And also, what was an interesting first-round knockout? Ohio State gets knocked out by the eventual finalist in Miami.
Yeah, I mean, I personally believe when, you know, you have Ryan, I'm talking about the Ohio State losing to Miami here. When you have Ryan Day coaching, it has never went well, and I still believe that to this day. It's never went well for him.
What do you mean? Okay, Nick, you're Ohio State fan. You just won an national championship last year, man.
Yeah, but we also had an offensive coordinator, not the head coach.
Ah, fair enough. All right.
The head coach cannot coach, really. I mean, he can, but he's better at being a head coach, not an offensive coordinator, because he apparently can't
draw a play.
So you're saying, like, you would rather him be, like, the overseer than the guy who's actually calling the plays?
Yep.
Which makes sense. Okay, all right. That I can kind of get with, because I was like, wait a second now, he's winning Natty. But I think you make a good point there. But to your point, though, Nick, looking back at it, it's crazy to think that Ohio State, outside of probably Penn State, played him better than anybody this year. I mean, you're talking to an Illinois grad, and I don't know if you saw the score of that game, man, but it wasn't good, you know. And Nick, well, let's do it. Let's fine. We're on the show. Might as well have fun with it, brother. I talked so much trash going into that game. Like, you have no idea, because you gotta think. Indiana, you know, they were good last year. But in my mind, I'm still thinking that it's Indiana. Like, they're not gonna like run the table.
Not supposed to be a football team.
Exactly. So I talked trash, you guys, probably for a month on the fan, and I mean, not like little old when I was like, we finna beat the brakes off them. We finna tell Kurt Cignetti to stick it. And then the game happened, and Illinois lost by 53. And boy, we were in Nashville for the Colts road game. And I remember I had a Colts employee, actually, one of the equipment guys who I know pretty well. I didn't know he was at this bar. He walks over to this table and just yells at me, who Hoosiers? And I'm like, what the heck is this? And yeah, I didn't enjoy that game. It was very painful. But I will tell you, from that point on, I knew IU was for real.
Yeah, but
it was a ranked matchup. He lost by 50.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
James, you can be upset about the Illinois loss too. Obviously,
can we get a little closer next time? I mean, we can lose, but my God, 50 is crazy.
50 is crazy, but you also have to think you weren't the only team at the manhandling of the Indiana Hoosiers this season either.
That's true.
I decimated Oregon in the playoffs, decimated Alabama in the Rose Bowl. I mean, we kind of just keep looking at it. Miami really was the only game that wasn't a blowout win besides Penn State.
Yeah, I mean, it's Penn State, Ohio State, and the Miami game. And
yeah.
You know, if you look at the combined margin of victory in those games, it's still more than 50 or less than 50. So, yeah, that was rough. I'm waiting for Illinois men's basketball to get a bit of revenge against IU men's basketball. How about that?
I need some
get back. I need a little bit of trash talk. I'm not used to this humble stuff. I mean, us getting our butts kicked. I got to go on the radio. People telling me, oh, where's the candy stripe pants at? People, you know, telling me that I'd go back to Illinois. I'm like, wait a second. You know, I'm used to the one having the trash talk here. But, you know, it's always good to, I guess, get a little humbled.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it will be interesting. No college hoops tonight for either Indiana or Purdue. But we do have a little bit of Friday night basketball actions. The Indiana Pacers, and once more, will face their old friend Miles Turner, the Milwaukee Bucks. I believe this game is at Milwaukee tonight.
Yes.
So, should be an interesting game in kind of what's been an awful season for the Bucks. There's really no other way to put it like that. But, James, let's talk about the big one this Sunday. And it almost feels like I can't kind of keep forgetting, to be honest. I don't know why, but we have the big one, though, the big 6-0, Super Bowl 60. It's Drake May and the New England Patriots versus, yes, Sam Darnold. Sam Darnold is a quarterback leading Super Bowl. There's a Super Bowl leading quarterback. Seattle Seahawks versus the Patriots in a rematch. Oh, you might have to help me out here, James. I don't know
if you
remember.
This was 2014, and I believe, I actually remember this. All right.
Super Bowl 49? Right.
It might have been 49, but honestly, I base it off of the year that they played, because all the Roman numerals, I mean, I paid attention in school, but not that much, so
yeah,
Nick and Bryson, your boys messed it up. But I do have a quick story about the first time they matched up, and this is a true story, and bear with me. My senior year of high school, we go to the Art Institute of Chicago, and guess who I see? This was before the season started. I see Darrell Revis. And I'm like, wow, that's Darrell Revis at the freaking art museum. I'm here on a random trip, Nick, and I'm thinking to myself, I'm here with a bunch of nerds who don't even care about sports, and I see one of the greatest cornerbacks ever. So I go over to him, and I'm like, hey, can I get a picture? And mind you, no one knew who he was but me in this, you know, setting.
Sure, you look a little off there.
Yeah, he told me, I'm not doing pictures. And I was like, I was heartbroken. I was like, what the heck do you mean? I'm doing pictures. Like, but so I was too scared to tell him to his face that was, you know, rude of him. My perspective has changed a lot since then. I was young and dumb. But I went to Twitter after that when I got back, you know, on the school bus. I was, you know, riding back. And I was thinking, you know what? I'm going to give Darrell Revis a piece of my mind. So I blasted him on Twitter. I was like, I met Darrell Revis at the Art Institute of Chicago. And he didn't, you know, take a picture with me. And we got into a Twitter argument. And the tweets have since been deleted.
This year, senior year.
Oh, Chris? Yes. I was young. So I'm telling you now, both of you, do not argue with professional athletes, because there could be a time where you might actually be in the same room as them. That hasn't happened for me yet, but if I do this long enough, who knows? I might get to sit down with Darrell Revis and hash this out. But I trash talked him, and I told him, I was like, you didn't take the picture with me. I don't like you. And he told me, well, I don't owe you anything. I was like, you owe the fans everything. And he was like, no, I don't. And so I told him, okay, well, that's why Legion of Boom and the Seahawks and Richard Sherman, all those guys are better than you, and I hope you lose every single game this year. So fast forward, he joins the Patriots.
Mm-hmm.
They get all the way to the Super Bowl, and I'm like, he has not lost every game. Like, I wish he would. They get down to the end of the game, and I'm thinking, oh, my gosh, this guy's going to get a Super Bowl, and, like, this is over. But then, as you remember that last Seahawks drive, Jermaine Kearse, I believe, made a crazy catch. They get down to the 1-yard line, And I'm thinking, oh, this is great. I got my Twitter fingers ready. I'm like, they're going to punch this thing with Marshawn Lynch, and I'm going to tell Darrelle Revis, yeah, you won all the games, but you didn't win the one that mattered. And then Russell Wilson threw a pick. The physical pain that I felt in my body after that, oh, I wanted to dissolve into the floor. I could not talk my trash. So let that be a lesson of, you know, you don't always get the last laugh. I didn't get the picture with Darrelle Revis. I didn't get the last laugh. The man won the Super Bowl when I told him, I hope you lose every game. And it didn't happen. Yeah. So I don't really have beef with Darrelle Revis anymore. I've since matured. But if I ever see Russell Wilson in person, I'm still mad at him for throwing that ball. I mean, he ruined it. I was going to have the greatest victory lap ever. And it didn't happen.
That's the thing. A lot of people argue.
True story. Honest to God, true story.
Hey, but you don't get this stuff anywhere else besides WBDG 90.9 and maybe The Fan, because, of course, James talks his stuff on The Fan, man, as well.
True story.
But we got about 5 or so minutes left, James. But, you know, and a lot of things with that as well. A lot of people blame, like, the play call as if Russell Wilson couldn't audible out of that if he wanted to.
All I know is Russell Wilson, I can't fight you because I would lose, but I'm still mad at you. I think I'm going to hold a grudge for the rest of my life against this guy. I saw him at NBA All-Star Weekend here for the Pacers a couple years ago. I was in the back hallways and I was thinking, why are you here? You ruined my life when I was in college. You have no, Nick, I was standing in front of the TV, brother, ready to skip it. And when he threw that interception, I was thinking to myself, wow, this guy, already super rich, Darrelle Revis, already probably future Hall of Famer, already has it all, gets the Super Bowl, and me, I got nothing. I don't even have bragging rights. I probably had a final the next day or something. It was not good. So let that be a lesson that, again, if you want to work in media, keep the Twitter fingers at a minimum. Do not argue with professional athletes. You might end up in the same room as them.
Yeah, good thing. The only thing I do on Twitter, I try to stay away now, trying to be more professional on Twitter.
I would recommend it.
As you know, I reached out to you on Twitter, yeah. But or X, as we call it now. But also, I got into, during the ECF last year, got into a little bit of argument with Knicks fans. But I'm not, like, tweeting Jalen Brunson, hey, you suck. So,
lessons
from Mr. Boyd here. But finally, as we're running out of time, Nicholas, we'll start with you. Super Bowl 60, Pat Seahawks. What is your final predictions?
Well, I think the Seahawks are going to get their revenge, and you can have something to look forward to.
All right.
Exact score prediction you want to say?
We'll do 30-21.
All right.
Okay. Well, since, you know, my scars have healed, and just to be different, because I feel like in this market everyone hates the Patriots, I'm going to pick the Patriots. 24-23. They're going to be a close game. I think Drake May has kind of struggled throughout the playoffs. But if they get a couple turnovers off Sam Darnold, I think that Drake May can put together his best playoff performance and secure a Super Bowl, which would be crazy to say as a second-year player for him.
Yeah, not a lot of people do that. People do it in their second year. Very few, actually. Obviously, Tom Brady did it in his second year. My prediction, I think I'm going to go – I like the – kind of like you said, James, I think it's going to be more of a defensive battle. I think this is – the Seattle defense is one of the, if not the best in the league.
Yeah.
And I'm going to go a low scoring, but I'm going to go with the Seattle Seahawks as the Super Bowl 60 champions, 23-20.
Okay.
I think it's going to be a low score. I think it's going to be a defensive game. So finally here – James Boyd, the Super Bowl 60 MVP will be
Drake May. That's my pick. I think it's always, not always, but I would say 90% of the time it's a quarterback. Yeah, so if they want to have a big game or they want to win that game, you need your quarterback to show up.
Really recent memory, I think Cooper Kupp in 2021.
Yeah.
Maybe.
I think the last one.
I don't know who won it last year. For some reason, my mind wants to say Cooper DeJean, but I don't think it was. Maybe it was Saquon, but he also didn't have a good year.
No, I believe it was Jalen Hurts.
Was it Jalen Hurts?
I believe it was Jalen Hurts, yep.
All right, so yeah, off the top of my mind, really Cooper Kupp back in that 2021-2022 season, last person.
And he's going for his second run.
No, he is going for his second. That was a little bit of a wholesome moment between the two former Rams, Stafford, Kupp. Forget what he said, but said something like, go get your Super Bowl or something like that. But, James, any last words here?
No, not really. I mean, I think we covered it all. I would just tell you all, you know, keep dreaming. I was in your shoes not too long ago. I'm getting old now. I'm 30. I got a couple gray hairs in the beard, but just have fun with it. You know, dream big and work hard. I mean, you're not going to get there overnight, but you can get there. I promise you, over many nights. You just got to stick with it.
100%. James Boyd, for those people listening, and also this will be a podcast as well, so you can find this wherever you get your podcasts as well. We're doing the live show right now. But James, for those of people that don't know you, where can they find you at?
Well, you can follow me on X/Twitter at RomeoVilleKid. Just sound it out. I promise it's not too hard to spell. And then you can check out my work at The Athletic and listen to us every morning during the week, 7 to 10 on 107.5 The Fan.
Hey, or if you want to go to my Twitter handle, it's Bryson _H18. Just go to my following and James will be in the vicinity
there
somewhere.
There you go.
Yeah, well, James, thank you for joining us. Definitely be listening Monday as well.
Yes, sir.
Hopefully we can have you on in the next couple of months. So maybe we can get you on during when the NBA conference finals are approaching in late May. But look forward to having you back, man. You're the best. Thank you for joining us.
Anytime, brother.
All right, with that being said, folks, Nicholas, any last words for the people?
No, I mean, enjoy your weekend and don't do anything stupid, basically.
Yes. Hey, that's the motto. Stay warm. Hey, give someone a compliment today. It's Feel Good Friday. Alongside James Boyd, Nicholas Mountcastle, I've been your host, Bryson Hill. Thank you for joining us on Hash Marks and Hardwood. I'll send you down. James, you got any song suggestions we can play? Any song that should be in here as long as it's clean?
I like Drake Trophies. I like the intro to that. So if you can pull that one up, the clean version, when the trumpet's coming, I always feel a little pep in the step. So there you go.
Let's see if it's in here. Here we go. With that being said, we got it in here. We'll play a little drop-in, and then Trophies will play.
James, much appreciated.
Thanks for joining us, man. Hopefully we'll have you soon. For those of y'all, stay safe, and God bless.